Before we get into this episode of Small Doses Podcast, I want to hip y'all to the fact that, you know, the murderer on the subway train who took Jordan Neely's life, Daniel Weber, well, guess what? They raised $2 million in legal fees for him already. $2 million in a legal fund. And that is embarrassing and disgusting. Because you know what? Mary Copney, who is Little Miss Flint, she has been trying to raise $1 million to get water filters for Flint, Michigan for the past 4 years and has still not made her goal. So you know what we need to do? We need to be a community and get behind her and actually help support something that is helping the people versus someone that killed one of our people. And yes, Jordan Neely is one of our people. So you can just go to @LittleMissFlint on Instagram or just go to GoFundMe and put in her name and contribute. It'll make you feel good that you're actually contributing to something that is really going to change people's lives. And while you're contributing to things that change people's lives, we over here at Smart Funny Black Productions are really trying to get to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, Amanda Seals TV, and we need y'all to do it. We're building a space where we're making conscious, empowering, hilarious content, and we need to get to that 100,000 mark to get to the next level, and I know y'all want to be a part of taking us to that level. So go over to YouTube, Amanda Seals TV, subscribe, and while you're there, poke around and see what you like. And if you really love what you see, then it might be worth heading on over to my Patreon. You can support at Patreon, Amanda Seals, or go to theamandaverse.com. It's going to get you to the same place. And you get bonus content, not just bonus content from Small Doses Podcast, which premieres every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Amanda Seals TV. But you also get bonus content from the other shows that we're posting on YouTube, as well as stuff that's too cool for Instagram and stuff that really is just for you all, the Seals Squad. So head on over to Patreon, go to theamandaverse.com, sign up. It's $5 a month. And if you don't like it, guess what? You can leave, but it's worth a shot. All right, now it's time to get into the next episode of Small Doses Podcast. This is Side Effects of Diaspora Wars. Keep it locked.
Self-help
from the hip.
Small doses.
We're
talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real. Small doses.
With me and Amanda Seals. It's so funky. All right, small doses, folks. You're looking at my outfit like, why is Amanda in the antebellum South? And I am not in the antebellum South. The reason I'm wearing this little getup is because we have Christina Brown here to talk about Diaspora Awards. Yes. And this felt very diasporic. It's like, Is she in a quinceañera for an Afro-Latina birthday? Is she in Martinique doing some type of cultural dance?
Yeah.
Is she... It doesn't even look African. It really you know, was, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. But I'm giving you Caribbean Festivus.
Yes.
That's what I'm giving today. And you are giving us so much knowledge.
Thank you. I try.
Diaspora Wars. Okay. So for those who don't understand, please just give like a basic framework for the Diaspora Wars. Not like your specific content, but like what are the Diaspora Wars that are even happening?
Black people across the world arguing about being black. Literally yes. About who's better at being black, who's the better black.
Who's blackest.
Who's blackest.
Who's blacker.
Who has culture. What is black culture? Who loves blackness more? It's like...
Yeah. That's a good one.
What are we even talking about? And meanwhile, white people are looking at us like,
You're all black.
Y'all niggas. What are you arguing about?
We don't like any of you.
Basically.
Equally.
Yes.
Which I find to be worth stating, but also not necessarily the vantage point that we have to draw from for our togetherness. Because I'm always trying to tell people, like, how we exist in our blackness should not be juxtaposed to whiteness.
No.
You know, like whenever I have people be like, well, if white people can't say nigga, why should we be saying? I'm like, if we want to talk amongst ourselves about why we want to say or not say nigga, then that's its own thing. But like, it has absolutely nothing to do with whiteness.
Nothing to do with whiteness. And I feel like the Diaspora Wars is always from the view of whiteness.
Isn't it?
Always from the view of whiteness. Like even when these people be, well, Africans do this and African Americans do this and Caribbeans do this. Who told you that? Where'd you get that from?
And listen, there's something valuable to the fact that like there are differences.
Absolutely.
And nuances. And that's beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are in a diaspora, which means we are of
but we are mm-hmm. other.
Exactly.
Right? So like, that's a beautiful thing. But I feel like too often the othering that we're doing to each other is actually mirrored from white supremacy.
100%.
It is literally like, oh, they said that you was less than us. And so now we're still like,
yeah.
The genocide in Rwanda was literally started because these Belgians came in and were like, ooh, Hutus, Tutsis.
Yep.
One of y'all better than the other.
Yep.
And it went on and on and on and on for centuries until finally there was a genocide.
Literally. And every time we have these like specific points that people are talking about, it just is white supremacy. When people are like, oh, dressing like this, twerking, that's ghetto. But whining and daggering and grinding, that's culture. It's the same.
It's the same.
It's the same. We all don't ask.
Just because you, just because you're doing it in a parade, you know, just because we're doing it behind a big truck does not make it when behind a big truck. Like that doesn't make it less what it is than what it is.
And we're doing it in front of a car.
Yes.
Same thing.
If you, you know, like, oh, I can't believe they were twerking at a brunch in Atlanta. Well, that's a thing
that's
happening.
What we do.
Yes.
We dance.
When you say we, who do you mean?
Black people across the world. Black people across the world. That's what we do. There's so many things that are similar. And like, I really started noticing it once I left Long Beach. Like, I lived in France for a couple years.
Flex. Why'd you live in France?
For three different times. For study abroad, teaching English, and then my master's.
What was the master's in?
International relations and diplomacy.
Really? What are you doing with that?
I just got it.
She's like, I'm trying to figure it out.
I just got it in June. I wanted to work for government and, you know, internationally, but it's too stifling. That's why I do content online, because I need to be able to speak my mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, parlez-vous français?
Oui, je parle français.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's all I can say. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Are you a polyglot? Like, do you feel like you pick up language quick?
I do. Right now, I think I only speak. No, I only speak French and English, mm-hmm. but I want to. When I travel, it's easy for me to pick up kind of languages based on where I'm at.
So let's go all the way back. Why are you even talking about this? Like, give me some background because Small Doses listeners, I want you to know. So I discovered Christina Brown because somebody like sent me one of your videos mm-hmm. and it was a video, part one of the Diaspora Wars. And you were doing this series for Black History Month mm-hmm. of just like, let me show y'all how silly these Diaspora Wars are. Then I started to realize that like the concept of Diaspora Wars is a thing that other people have been talking about. Like, yeah. I mean, it's a name that's being given to something that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And any of us who grew up in an immigrant household know this because we have had our immigrant parents be like, those Black people. And you're like, cut it out. Mm-hmm. Cut it out. And then you have Black Americans who are like, you're a coconut. And I'm like cut it out. Cut it out. And so like, I see this all the time. Like there was a very heated argument that happened online around like Caribbean involvement in the creation of hip hop. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of folks that were like, Caribbeans had nothing to do with the creation of hip hop. And I was like,
really?
That's just not accurate. But like, it's literally just inaccurate. And it also doesn't devalue the importance of the fact that like, it was created on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
So like, yes, it is a Black American creation that was very much involving second generation yeah. Caribbean people, even first generation Caribbean people, because something people was born it was, and then came over here.
It was in New York.
Well, yeah, right? Like who heard is Jamaican. So,
anyways,
all right. But I say all that to say that I saw your video and I was just like, ah, someone is like doing this because I feel like it's the type of thing where like you get in conversation about it, but you don't necessarily get the chance to like really like spell it out. And what you've done is like you're spelling it out over the course of this series. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, I need to know more about this person. Like, mm-hmm. why is she even doing this? How is she even capable of doing this? Like, what is her background? And here we are.
Here we are. My background.
Yes,
well, I studied.
That's French.
I know. Oui, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. I studied political science in French, double majored in my bachelor's. And that's when I first studied abroad. I've always wanted to travel, right? And I'm from Long Beach, California. And my parents are, my mom's Black American, my dad's Black and white. So okay. I'm just like generationally being Black American, African American. But a lot of people tend to think I'm either Caribbean or like Ethiopian, East African. So I get...
You got a lot of flavors in your whole
setup. I know.
You got freckles. Then you got this like curly hair, but it's like a 2B yeah. curl.
2B? Don't do that to me.
Yeah.
2B?
Because if I'm a 2C...
You're not a 2C.
Ain't
what
no
am
way. I?
Like a 3B, 3... Uh-uh. I'm pull not, the chart
I can't, up. I can't give myself that. That ain't even right.
You got a curl. The
I two, have a curl.
The two is the wave.
I have a curl. The two is the wave?
Yeah, two is the wave.
Like a beach wave?
Yeah, like a wave. Yeah.
Who got a wave?
White people.
Oh, see, here's the thing. This whole chart, I ain't never really fucked with this chart in the first
place. It's really racist, apparently. Like, yeah, it's a racist chart. It is. It's a bad chart.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
So I just want to start there. So yeah. I never really like assigned myself to the chart that way. But yeah. I thought the chart was only for our hair. I didn't know even white people.
No, there's a whole
on the chart too?
There's a whole one.
Oh my God. So one is just like the stick straight, mm-hmm. like Matilda, like just yeah. straight. Okay. Yeah. So then
I guess, but on the chart, you'd probably be like a 3C, 3B. But either way.
But what's the curliest, curliest?
Four. Like 4C. Either way.
Yeah, because I always hear.
Yeah. Either way, we exist in the texturist. Median. The yes. like, oh, this is the bet. Either way, we exist there.
Okay.
I was like, don't give me two. Hey.
My fault.
Ooh,
my
I went, wait a minute.
I thought yeah. that it was just for us. Because I looked at them like, I mean, what y'all need to chart for? This shit is straight.
No, exactly.
Okay. So fast forward.
I do. I have a lot of like ethnic ambiguity. People are like, where are you from? So as I like.
Yeah. If you were in acting, you would get, so what are you?
Yeah.
Which I get a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. So I was like, as I was traveling and like meeting different people from the continent, like from Africa and meeting people from the Caribbean. And I would hear a lot of discussions from people that were, I was just like, what are you talking about? Like one time in my grad school program. So after I graduated with my bachelor's, I went to France to teach English, went back to Paris to get my master's, international relations and diplomacy. And some people in the program, there was a Ugandan ambassador. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, it was at the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, George Floyd. And we were talking about Black Lives Matter. And he was saying the most anti-Black, specifically African-American, anti-African-American things like, mm-hmm. well, you guys, the Black Lives Matter movement is racist. And
oh,
yeah, yeah. Ugandan ambassador, Black Lives Matter is a racist, white people matter too, and you guys go out in there and you riot and you fight. And Dude. Then he went on to blame, he's like, even in Uganda, I see like, we just don't accept what the Europeans did for us. And he blamed, oh, it was.
He said that basically we weren't as strong as they were.
Yeah, yes.
Oh,
yeah. That's convenient. And we were like, oh my gosh. And then- this younger woman gets on the...
So this... In what setting is this? This is a dinner? Like a panel?
We had a Zoom because it was a pandemic. So it was a Zoom call to talk about Black Lives Matter, right? And
this is within your...
Program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is the ambassador and he's being like brought in...
No, he was a student. He was getting a PhD.
Yes. Okay.
Can you imagine? Mm. That was his speech, his keynote.
That's why I needed some clarification. Q&A.
Right, yeah. No, he was our classmate. So I was like, what is he talking about? He's like, you're an ambassador. Anyway, so this other woman who is half African-American and half Cameroonian gets on the call and she's like viscerally upset, obviously.
Naturally, yeah.
And she's like, it does not matter. If you came to Texas, they would see you and me as a monkey. And she said that. And he was like, oh. And we're like, yeah.
You sound like one right now.
Yeah. And we're like, that was kind of like... I had had other conversations about Blackness around the world that I was like, this is interesting. Like, why when I say I'm Black American, people go, that's it? Just? You're so pretty. You're so pretty to be Black American. Okay, you're exoticizing other Black people outside of America. I don't fit your...
Who's the people saying that to you, though? Other Black people?
I've gotten it from other Black people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I get it when it's like, oh, but you look like you could be family. Like, you look like you could be here. Mm-hmm. But when it's... Oh, you don't know where you're really from. I got that recently.
Oh, that's cute. Like, you need to do Ancestry? Like,
it was in New York. He was a Black man. He was Cuban and Jamaican. And he was like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, oh, my parents are Black American. You know, just down the line, generations. Mm-hmm. And he went, oh, yeah, that's right. You wouldn't know where you're really from. And I went, oh, I mean, your people just got dropped off like mine did.
Yeah.
So if I don't know where I'm from, you don't know where you're from, right? Because you're Cuban, Jamaican. And he was like, oh. We have culture. What do you mean? And we got in this whole argument on the streets of Brooklyn.
This is why I moved from New York. You see, this is exactly the type of shit. I asked her, why did you move to New York? This is exactly why I moved from New York, because I was fighting with people in the streets.
Yeah.
Listen.
Outside of a taco truck.
You went to just get you a taco.
I wanted to get me a taco.
And you ended up in an entire...
Because did I ask for more? On the streets. I'm trying to get a taco at 4 a.m. I'm tired.
You was leaving the club?
Yes. Right. Everyone was having a good time. Maybe that's the problem.
You know what? He was trying to holla, and then it went left, and then he had to, like, try to hustle and flow his way to, like, save his ego.
That tracks.
That is not a unique thing to find your, like, I don't feel like that's a unique conversation to find yourself in once you start talking to people about culture. Like, I started Smart, Funny, and Black, the show, because I got so tired of, like, all the negative images of Black folks, but also because I kept hearing people say things like, Black American culture is not a real thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't understand where y'all are getting that from. You're wearing a Tupac shirt.
Like, wearing a do-rag.
Like, we as Black Americans make culture that affects the world, like, over and over and over again, like jazz.
Hello.
So it's interesting to me when diasporically we engage in the perpetuation of erasure because we don't even see ourselves as connected.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
When I saw your videos, I was like, you know, not enough people are getting this basic conversation and being a part of this conversation. I saw a video the other day. I posted it to my Instagram where it was a group of people from Africa. I'm not sure what countries they were from because it was a clip. So I'm not sure like the whole conversation, but it was a sister saying that when she would first hear about Black people in America complaining about injustice, that it made her feel like we were not grateful for what we have. And she's like, you know, I don't have water. And you're talking about racism, like just get over it. And everybody I know who is watching this video starts out like, who the hell? And then she turns and she's like, until I started doing my own research. And I started realizing that what happened in America is a unique experience to those Black people because their culture and their entire connectivity to like where their ethnicity, where their origination came from was cut off. And it's not to say that we can't like trace our way back, but it's the fact that it was by force.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so for you, I wonder, like, what is it that made you say, okay, I have to take this from just being curious to now like actually delving into this? Because to my understanding from your videos, the fact that you have part one, part two, part three, et cetera, means that there's like research that's been done. It's not just like cursory observations.
Yeah. I guess through my experiences and my own like research.
But what made you do the research?
What made you take it from
like, oh, this is something I'm noticing and it's whack to like, oh, let me dive in.
What made, because it's delusional. Like, I just don't like things that don't make sense. I'm like, how do
what
we-
What sign are you?
Scorpio.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's a very Virgo thing.
Really?
Yes. I'm a Virgo rising. I'm a Cancer, but I'm a Virgo rising. When things don't make sense, it's like, shoot me in my face.
Yeah, I'm an Aquarius rising and moon.
I don't know anything about Aquarian women. Aquarian men are the devil.
As I've heard. Oh.
Are you an Aquarian man? See? He came in here and he was like, yeah, that's a better look for the shot. I'm like, that tracks. That is so Aquarian. It is hilarious.
My dad's an Aquarius too.
So Aquarian men are very like, I am here and I will inform you of the things that I know.
It is true.
And
it
you're
is
like,
true.
Okay, appreciate it.
I think Aquarius woman, I think it's an Aquarian thing.
Is it Aquarian
a little
woman
bit,
like
which
too?
Is why I made it look. I'm like, I have to inform everyone. Like a little bit. It can be overwhelming, but it's, I just want to help because it doesn't make sense. And it makes me really upset. I'm like, we're arguing. As I've learned about like racism and like white supremacy colonization, and we learn about how they indoctrinate us with it, and we're like, we perpetuate colorism and misogyny noir and texturism, and the diaspora war is part of that. And I realized no one was really kind of like talking about that as in depth as I think we should be, because it's systemic just as much as these other things, but it's embedded with xenophobia. It's embedded with a specific type of anti-Blackness. Like, anti-Blackness looks different here in America versus maybe over there. And that over anti-Blackness from like the lens of being a Black American towards Africans is mixed with xenophobia. Towards Caribbeans, it's mixed with xenophobia. But then anti-Blackness from that lens looking at Black Americans is mixed with like an erasure of culture. And I would just wanted us to be like, from my studies and experiencing, like, I went to Senegal and had tabujun. This is like jollof rice, kind of. What do you mean? Or like, I've had rice and pea. The Jamaicans always get on me when I'm like, it's a bean. But we're going to call it rice and peas.
Yes. It's rice and peas. Well, listen, here's the thing. Because you can make rice and peas with peas. But a lot of times in the Jamaican restaurant, they're making it with a kidney bean. But, you know, it's a pigeon pea. Because Grenadians make it with a pigeon pea.
Oh, okay.
And Trinidadians and Guyanese make it with pigeon peas.
Okay. As I've learned. But either way, I'm gonna call it a rice and peas. I'll call it that.
It's rice or peas and rice.
Peas, that's ugh. Mm-hmm. But either one would eat it.
Yeah.
And we have these, it's rice and peas are better. Peas and rice and beans, red beans and rice. I'm like, it's, are we noticing that it's the same? It's very similar-esque. It's connected.
Right. Like there's elements that give it its own little zhuzh, mm-hmm. but there's enough of a through line that it's obvious that this is, like, there's no through line between rice and peas and sauerkraut.
Literally.
like there's no through line between red beans and rice and, like, I don't know, moussaka. I just watched Big Fat Greek Wedding yesterday for no reason.
Okay.
So you can tell, mm-hmm. culturally, these things exist in, like, different places.
Yeah.
But with our stuff, it's so obvious. And I think there's such a beauty in it that we're missing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
We land in the negative. Mm-hmm. And the negative is only dictated by divide and conquer white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why we exist there so comfortably versus searching for the beauty.
I feel like it's this crabs in the bucket, coonery, we need to be the better Black people. I'm being so dead ass. Like, I think it's like, it's a weird, like, well, this is real culture. We're not doing that. Or this is kind
but
of like.
Who is it for?
I've been trying to figure, like, maybe a protection. A part of it seems like people want to protect it. Like, this is. White people have embedded so much into our culture that we don't want to be tied to anything that might feel close to white. I really cannot, I can't grasp it. That's why I started the series, because I'm like, look at how similar we all are. And look at how within the similarities, there's differences and they're beautiful. And that's fine. Like, you could have jollof rice, gullah red rice, jambalaya, tabujan, and it all tastes different. But you can be like, oh my gosh, this is a cousin. We're cousins. Like, why is that not cool? I don't understand why that isn't cool. Why we have to sit, like you're saying, in the space of just divide.
I will say, when it comes to Americans, I feel like there's definitely this element of hyperprotectiveness mm-hmm. because so much has been taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I feel like that's why Black Americans, like, we end up, like, taking ownership of things that aren't even ours, but, like, really trying to claim it. Like, our block. Like, we really be like, this is my block.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from this block. Nobody can come on this block. And it's, like, well,
relax.
Actually, it's not your block. Like, it's the bank's block.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what hood you in, like, is this gang's block. And they running shit. And you can't bring nobody in here unless they say that you can bring somebody in here. Mm-hmm. And if they decide that they want your shit for their gang, they just gonna take it.
Exactly.
So there's that. And I think there's something to be said for, like, how that becomes extremism that doesn't serve us. Because it ends up ostracizing in the same way that we have been ostracized.
I mean, it goes into, we're not from Africa, which is...
the ancestral side. Well, you know, there's a lot of confusion that has simply just been caused by crackers. Like, that's really what it boils down to. And I know people are like, you just said crackers!
Yes.
And it's like, if you were offended by that, then it might be about you. Because... there are people who happen to be white that completely understand the difference between them and crackers, okay? Mm. And ultimately, the effort of whiteness to completely dismantle everyone else but them
mm-hmm.
has been done on a very visceral level. Like, it's done spiritually, it's done culturally, it's done, like, through gender, like, it's done in a myriad of ways. And we just, like, help it along when we continue to other people using their devices, right? Yeah. Like, I'm always shocked by the effort that is made to, quote unquote, like, protect Black American culture through the means of pushing other things mm-hmm. away that may have had influence.
Yeah.
When I think something that is very, and I know some of y'all listening like, oh, hell no. Hear me out. America is a unique place. Unlike a number of African countries, America was a place where there was a welcoming of immigration, mm-hmm. right? There was an ease of immigration, and there was an economy that drew people to it in a way that, like, Mozambique would not have, right? And it's not a slight to Mozambique. It's just that that wasn't where it was positioned in the global, like, I don't know, like, the global attractiveness for...
Yeah. It's the West.
Yeah. The West became, like, a thing. So it's, like, it's only natural that, like... what ends up being considered Black American here is colored by so many other mm-hmm. elements because America became a place where so many other people were coming.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I do know why. I need to stop saying I don't know why. We do know why. We do this because the effort to protect is really a trauma response That's
absolutely.
Why.
Absolutely. It is. Yeah.
It's a trauma response. So then what do you want people to take from your Diaspora Wars videos?
You know, I was going to be like, I want people to see that we're so similar. But people are still arguing in my comments.
What are they arguing about? Like, what are some things that, like, stand out to you?
Literally arguing what I'm talking about in whatever the current video is. Be like, I hear you, but there's no similarity between jambalaya and jollof rice. So tomato-based rice dish that has some meats in it, some chicken, some sausage, maybe chabuja, some seafood. There's nothing similar about how you made that dish at all. Like, there's nothing similar about the fact that we have black-eyed peas and rice as Black American for, like, bringing in New Year's when black-eyed peas comes from West Africa. Like, there's nothing similar at all. People are still arguing. Or the big one is the difference between race, ethnicity, nationality, and ethnic origins.
Break it all the way down. Let's take our time with
God.
This. Race, ethnicity, nationality, ethnic origins.
Please. This is what I say. Race.
I'm going to sit back and sit.
Race is a social colonial construct based on phenotype, how you physically look. Mm-hmm. Ethnicity is one's shared cultural experience based off of language, culture, sometimes ethnic origins, and based off of like cultural traditions and location, geography. Nationality, where the fuck you was born.
That's it.
That's it. That's the simplest one.
That's it. And you can even say where you have citizenship.
Where you have citizenship.
Because I wasn't born in Grenada, but I have citizenship in Grenada.
Okay.
So I have dual citizenship.
Dual nationality.
When fascism pops off over here, I'm out.
Lucky you. I will be here.
No.
But I will.
Go to Ghana. Ghana's like, come over here.
They are. Mm-hmm. And I might. Judges might. And then ethnic origins, DNA, ancestry, where your people may have like originated from.
So ethnicity, ethnic origins, two different things.
Yeah. I consider them two different things because my ethnic origins could be, I could be Fulani, Wolof. I could be from Senegal, right? Or
but your existed
ethnicity,
experience.
My shared culture, my language, my customs, where my people are, Black American, African American.
Right.
My race.
Negro. Okay.
Colored. And when I mean I don't know, I'm a colored
Jeremiah
Negro.
Is dying, y'all. Like, yeah.
Because it's really sad I have to break it.
It's not sad that you have to break it down. It's honestly, look at what's going on in the schools in America. Like, they were never great to begin with. And now they're, like, actively choosing to get worse, right?
Yeah.
Like, the legislators who determine what gets taught in these spaces are, like, choosing to make it worse.
Yeah.
So, like, these types of nuances, like, this is very college-level conversation. Like, these individual classifications, like, I knew more about how to classify marine animals than I knew how to classify, like, humans.
Yeah.
Kingdom, phylum, genus, species, etc. Like, I could do that. Mm. But, like, there was no anthropology being taught, you know? So it's necessary that you break this down because I think so much of the arguing also happens because of just ignorance.
Yeah, and not knowing.
And the fact that these things can also be intersectional, right? Because
often, like, are. They often are.
Like, so people are like, Amanda, you're not a foundational Black American because your mother is Caribbean. I'm like,
your mama.
But my father. My father is a Black man who's a descendant of slaves in Arkansas. And like, no, but it's about your mother.
Who says who?
And I'm like, we're not even a matriarchal society. So does that mean that Malcolm X is also not foundational Black American? Mm. And then it starts to get a little shaky.
They're like, well, when you say
because
it like that.
Malcolm X's mother is also from Grenada.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Malcolm X's mother is a mixed woman from Grenada. Like,
ooh.
Her father is white and her mother is Black.
Wow.
From Grenada, the Isle of Spice. Mm. And his father, however, was a Black American man who was a revolutionary and was really not playing with these white folks, which is why they ended up having crosses burned on their lawn, et cetera. Mm. And they were, like, very much harassed by the Klan. Mm. So it's not cut and dry. Like, the intersectionality happens.
Yeah.
And I think there's, like, a weird, like, purity that people align with value and with identity.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, a purity. And then I've recently heard people talk about, like, well, no, I'm not Black. That one gets me.
What's this one?
I'm not Black. I'm Nigerian. Or I'm not Black.
Oh, I thought you were, like, talking about, like, Idris Elba. I'm not Black. I'm an actor. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, I mean, a little bit, kind of. Black is a color. I'm not black. I'm like,
yes, you are.
Okay.
Well, let me hear this from you. Where do you feel like the identity of blackness moves from race to ethnicity?
That's a good question. Because when people say I'm not black, they're like, I'm not gonna identify myself in what the man wants to identify. Well, it is what it is. I don't know what to tell you. We live in a construct. And
I've been trying to tell y'all, we live in a construct.
We live in a construct.
Like,
you can't,
I know there's no spoon. It's the Matrix. I know there's no spoon, but also we here though.
You can't exist outside of it no matter how much you want to. Number one. So like,
but even if you did mentally say, because I will tell you this, with white people, I'm like, I can't really rock with you unless you have consciously understood the difference between like your assignment to whiteness in the construct and your assignment to whiteness in yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Like you understand in this construct, I'm white, so I benefit from privilege. I benefit from all these things. But in my soul, I identify as like Irish and British. You know what I'm saying? Like I identify with like these cultures. Like I don't see myself, like I don't align my identity with this race. I think for black people, it's harder to do.
Yeah. I think it is because a lot of people assign, they just think of blackness with the oppression and they don't want to align themselves with just their oppression. And they refuse to see the culture and the beauty within blackness, even though it came from something that was like terrible. But we still have culture. We still have like, at least for me, I feel proud to be black. Like, I'm proud of my ancestors. I'm proud of what they built. I'm proud of what my cousins around the world have built in different cultures. I'm proud to find the similarities. I'm proud to see the differences and how we put our dang down, flipped and reversed it wherever we were. I'm proud of that. I don't feel my identity in blackness is solely based off the marginalization that I experience. And I think a lot of black people see it as only that because, I mean, that's how it was built, right? But I think we do such a huge disservice by just continuing to see it like that. Like, there's still culture within, like, I mean, our people did what we had to do. And we, like, made beautiful things out of, like...
And continue to.
And continue to. Why am I going to erase that or act like that doesn't exist? Or act like the world doesn't see it because the world sees it. That's why they want to dip into our cultures everywhere. Mm-hmm. You mean you have people who want to dip into Afro... Just music, Afro beats, dance hall, hip hop. Like, they want to dip into that because they see what we've cultivated. Why can't we see it?
I also think there's like this weird thing where in America, I don't know if it's this way in other countries in the diaspora, but in America, there's this idea that your blackness is based on your level of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, well, if you have not kind of like ticked off this list of like black oppression, then you're not as black as this person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other part for me that ends up getting us into another version of like the divide and conquer of it all, right? Because then that takes us out of diaspora wars into class wars.
Yeah.
Which is still like, how do we keep y'all separated, right? Because if you don't feel like you are connected to these people that may not have had as much access as to you, then you may not feel compelled to give them access with your access, which then of course creates a lot more opportunity to take over. I don't even like the word take over, but to end the gap, the chasm economically, right? Like I have definitely, like I was told as you talk white, like my whole life, like you talk white, you talk white, you talk white. Like I know that if I talked with it, I said this on Candy Burris's podcast and people were like, I don't know why she's saying that, but it's true. If I spoke differently, people who look at me and say like, oh, like why is she, like, cause people tell me I'm not black every day.
They tell me that too. Only online.
Yeah, no one's ever said it to my face, but they online. Love to be like, oh, like, I mean, like, why are you even talking about things? You're not black. And I'm just like,
they tell me that all the time. They tell me I'm a white, They told me, someone told me I was blackfishing. I was like, oh, this would be a great job. I don't know who.
Wow. I was going to say, that's some great tanning.
Yeah.
All the way to the fingertips, cuticles even.
They tell me I'm raised by a white father. White
mother. Oh, yeah, I've had a white parent. I do a biannual posting of my parents.
just so you know.
Yeah, just reminding you
still
all.
Black.
I found a picture of my father in a dashiki just to, like, take it another level.
But people tell you you're not black. I'm sorry.
Well, no, people love to tell me I'm not black because I speak a certain way. And I know that that's at the crux of it. I know that if I had a different accent or... Like, I learned early on that once I started saying I, like, people were dealing with me differently.
Interesting.
Yeah, like once I inserted y'all and I, like not even inserted, but once it like naturally became a part of my language just because of the people I was hanging around, like people dealt with me differently. Black people dealt with me differently. Because I think that there was again, we come up with these ways to separate each other. And there was this idea that because I spoke a certain way, that it represented how I looked at other Black people. Mm-hmm. Because I spoke a certain way that was representative of access to education. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if I had that access to education, then I must think I'm better than folks. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the thought process.
Do people not know what code switching is?
I mean, we wear the mask of grins and lies. I mean, like, but it's also, like, Imani Perry, like, she talks in her book. I'm reading it right now. And I always forget the name of books I'm reading. But she speaks about how, like, preposterous it is to say that, like, how slaves and field slaves, one had it better than the other.
Oh, my God.
And she's just like, well, everybody was a slave. So there's that. But when we talk about the diaspora, I feel like that's a conversation I hear a lot, too, where people are like, oh, well, slavery in America, like, was worse than slavery everywhere else. So y'all didn't have to go through the same thing.
It's like, who said that? Who told you that?
I mean, it's just not true.
I've heard people say, well, I don't have, oh, my gosh, this was on Van Lathan's podcast recently. He was having a conversation. I forgot the man's name. He's Nigerian. I don't know if he's like first gen.
Oh, that annoying man.
He was
the one who's like the Black guy that white guys like. What's he call himself? Like the approachable Black man or something? Yvonne Orji's X-Man. Is that the one? Emmanuel Echo Oko.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his last name.
Him.
Yeah, he said enough statements at this point where I'm just like,
yeah, okay.
He should probably not talk.
A little bit. He said, I don't have the same trauma as Black Americans. And we were like, what? You're speaking English. Let's start there. What do you mean you don't have the same
What? Because a lot of people don't know that English is the language of Nigeria.
Like
there's tribal languages, but like English is like the national language.
And why is that? Let's get, like, why do you, what happened? Colonization. What do you mean you don't have the same trauma?
Well, okay. I mean, I will say this. I don't think it's the same trauma, but I think it's like when it's presented in that fashion, mm-hmm. it makes it sound as if there wasn't trauma.
Yeah.
And then it also has this yucky connotation of like, I'm more emotionally advanced or like I'm less aggressive or I like, do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it has a hint of that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that to me is where we end up getting the pushback. Did Van push back?
Oh, absolutely. It was a whole argument. And then they went back and forth on Twitter talking about the exchange where Van did push back. And he was like, it got a little heated.
Did it?
Mm-hmm.
Van owes me a public apology, so I need to bring him on here and we can talk about that. But that's another conversation, Van. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, let's stay here. I'm nosy.
It'll happen.
Okay. Good.
But I think that there's something really dope about just the format in which you are presenting the Diaspora War. So for the people who are listening who have not seen these videos, please break it down for them, like how you're laying this out so that they can now seek out these videos and educate themselves.
I am laying it out in PowerPoint format.
Like, my favorite.
I love a good PowerPoint, right? With images, imagery, very simple, you know, words, images, just very straightforward. Mm-hmm. I have memes and I'm putting it mainly on my TikTok and my Instagrams. My TikTok is That Brown Girl, spelled with two U's. And then my Instagram is Miss Xtina B, because I don't have the domain on either one. I can't get the same, right?
I'm trying.
But yeah, right now I have 7 videos. I'm trying to get to 10 in the next couple of days. And I'm just this regular PowerPoint format. I'm opening it up.
When I say format, I mean like, what are you talking about?
How am I laying it out to them?
Yes. Like part one is?
Part one is... That's just the intro. So there's a lot of different things. I'm like, part one, here are 10 things that are pretty similar amongst us across the diaspora. Food. So I have like jambalaya and jollof rice. Boom. Let's talk about this. I have stews. Boom. Rice and beans. And then I go into like dancing. I go into my favorite segment is the, I forgot Black people can also be annoying too.
Yes. Shout out to Abbott Elementary.
Abbott Elementary. Right. So I have... That's my favorite one, because I break down like quotes or different types of Black people that are like, this is really annoying in the Diaspora War. So like, I'm not Black, I am insert ethnicity, which is where I explain the difference between race and ethnicity.
It's like when Dominicans say like, I know Black, I'm Dominican.
And you know, I thought that was hyperbole.
Oh.
Until Because I didn't grow up around that.
Oh, right. You in New York.
I'm in New York now.
A lot of people don't understand. Once you leave New York, Dominicans ain't everywhere. No. Like, Dominicans are not everywhere. Like, there's always, like, a Mexican enclave, I feel like, that you can find. Like, even Puerto Ricans are a little more spread out. But, like, Dominicans be in, like, Florida and New York.
Yeah.
And so once you come to California, like, I ended up randomly living across the hall from a Dominican woman when I first moved here.
That's crazy.
And I feel like it was the gods being like, I'm going to ease you back into L.A. I'm going to just give you a little taste of New York. Was she at Santeria? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Literally, like, when I came to see my apartment, I heard, like...
Love that.
I was like, did she always play this music this loud?
Love that.
And the building manager was like, oh, she's a witch. It's like, period. Great. But no, Dominicans in New York.
I'm black, I'm Dominican. I thought that was hyperbole. I thought it was jokes. I was like, people, they not for real. And then I was like, wait, really?
Yes. Which is also annoying because there's an abundance of fineness and it cancels it out.
I know.
It cancels it out.
And they're so very black. Like, that's what I'm
like. Yes.
I'm like, y'all are some Negroes.
Like, full what? On. But also not even in just, like, phenotype, but in, like, practice.
Yeah.
Like, the nigganess of Dominicans is undeniable.
And then when people, when they think I'm Dominican.
But I got thought.
Hello.
They'll be like. You look super Dominican.
But then they'll be like, you're Dominican and you're black. I'm like, so if you clock me as someone who's black and could be Dominican, but you don't think there's Afro-Dominican. Like, I don't understand how you see black people who aren't Dominican. And you're like, they could look like they could be Dominican, but there's no black Dominicans. I'm not black, I'm Dominican. What?
It sounds very people at Trump rallies.
Oh.
It sounds very people at Trump rallies. So, okay, so that's one of the things that annoys you. What's another thing that black people say in this diaspora war space that annoys you?
Oh, I love the, we're not from Africa. We're the original Native Americans.
Talk to that, please. Because that's been a conversation in this house.
What is there to say? I don't.
That's a conversation that's in this house. And he's like, babe, I'm telling you, like, there's, like, black Native Americans. And I'm like, I'm not saying there wasn't. But when people start saying, he did not say this, but when I hear people say things like, well, how come we never found no slave ships? And I'm like,
it's so ahistorical.
And slave ships were cargo ships. So
we were property.
So once they stopped shipping slaves, they started shipping other cargo. So it's not to say that we haven't found slave ships. It's to say that, like, those ships became purpose for other things. And then there's, like, a historical research that has to be done to say, like, oh, this ship, the Maritime, that had begun shipping tobacco. And then before that was shipping, I don't know, fish hooks, et cetera, originally was shipping niggas.
Yeah.
And before that, it was shipping, I don't know, other things that was happening. Rice. Tea.
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 That's a big one. I don't really know. What do you say to that?
Because I don't know. You're the one with the masters. Well, I have a master's
too. I said, wait a minute.
I have a master's too.
Man. Right there.
But you're the guest.
That one, what do I have to explain? Like, we have proof of, like, slave ships, people being sold. We have proof of plantations. We have... I've heard some people say, well, there were also African people who were in the Americas before slavery started. Okay. So there were African peoples that came to the event. Either way.
They didn't start here.
Exactly. And I'm sure there are Black Native Americans, like people who are Native American and of Afro descent or have also Afro descent. But that doesn't.
Well, there's also something to be said for there are Native Americans that have a similar phenotype. Right?
Yeah.
Like the Cherokee, many would say, like, look black.
Well,
in the traditional sense that we apply to Africans.
Yes.
Right? Like, they're like, yeah, like, look at their skin, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that there's an important aspect here to call out, which is that I think a lot of folks that do assign themselves to this do so because there's a feeling like, and you mentioned this earlier, there's a feeling like if we are just assigned to Africa, then that means that our connectivity is through oppression. And then it feels like we are only a part of that lineage. And why can't we be a part of a greater lineage?
It's why they're obsessed with, like, the Egyptian kings and queens. We were pharaohs. We were kings.
Don't make me go get my Hotep hat. I'm literally looking at it.
So, I mean, we were, outside of Egypt too, you know,
right.
So, yeah, we were, and we can still connect to that. I don't know. I think it feels like a trauma response. It feels like we don't want to be connected to the oppression. But I mean, it is what it is. I don't know.
See, the is what it is part of it is the thing. And I think that what happens is that purity part is not just in like, oh, preservation of like one type of blackness. But I think there's also this idea that things cannot have multiple things being true at one time.
Yeah.
We can simultaneously have been kings and queens and also have been taken through a middle passage to this country and had that lineage attempted and in many ways successfully stripped from us until we have like made it our business to reconnect that lineage, right? Like all of that can be true at the same time. And I think it's sad that we are making a choice, a lot of us, to disconnect from that because it's the same type of shit as the white people who don't want to talk about Black history.
Yeah.
Or, no, my phone is going off. I'm just like, oh. By the way, that's Jesse Collins, and I'll bet you he's calling me to talk about my special, which means we are going to do a comedy special. I'm doing a comedy special, okay? So don't, y'all just understand. It's going to happen.
I've been waiting.
Okay? You bet you have?
Yeah. I watched I Be Knowing.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It was like, that was a minute ago.
It was. There was
What's the hold
there
up?
Was a whole, there was a pandemic. What's the
there was a pandemic. My bad.
There was a pandemic. I had a nervous breakdown. There was a pandemic. There it was like stuff happening. There you was. Know, so.
I completely forgot. My bad. I'm going to put the pressure on you. That was
Too much. So tell me this. What did you experience with Black people in France?
With Black people in France?
And like, what is the cultural and ethnicity of Black people in France that you were really interacting with? Because I know there's a lot of Senegalese.
I mean, yeah.
Right?
Ghanaian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know that.
A lot of people from Guinea. Senegalese, Cote d'Ivoire, a lot of people, Cote d'Ivoire, La Réunion, not a lot of Haitian folks.
But like Martinique, I feel like Guadeloupe.
Martinique, Guadeloupe, yeah. And I mean, the conversations I had with them, let me reflect. My experience with race in France was definitely with like the other people outside of Black people. I don't really feel like I had really toxic diaspora wars with the Black people in France. It was more so like, oh, like, it would be like, what are your origins? That would get that question, like, Monsieur, quoi tes origines? What are your origins? And I'm like, you know, this thing, slavery. I don't really fully know. Like, I don't know if I am. Well, you look like you're East Africa. You look like you're this. I very well could.
You have an Eritrean-esque.
I get it all the time, especially out in LA.
Yeah, there's like a whole East Africa element you got cracking out.
Ethiopian all the time.
Ethiopian.
Speak Amharic. And I'm like, no. They're like, why don't you speak Amharic? I'm like, because I'm not Ethiopian. Because I'm not Ethiopian.
That's like when they're like, are you Alicia Keys? I'm like, no. And they're like, why aren't you Alicia Keys? I'm like, because I'm not. That's a real conversation that happened to me on 125th Street. Hey, New York. Yeah.
I'll move eventually. No, I'm kidding.
So now that you're in Brooklyn,
yeah,
where do you feel like the experience has taken you so far culturally?
I'm experiencing a lot more of like, the diasporic cultures of the Caribbean. So, okay, I guess in Europe and in France and like London, it was very like African. Mm-hmm. I was experiencing a lot of different like people who had different ethnicities from Africa. And now that I'm in New York, it's like a lot of Caribbean and a lot of Latin America, which is so cool because I tell people on the West Coast, in my experience, like growing up, it was really just like you Black or brown,
yep,
Asian. Like if you're Black in the West Coast, you typically are someone that has roots from the South.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much it. If there was something else, you'd be like, oh, this person is part Jamaican. Okay. Or this person is Ethiopian. Cool. Like, okay. You're like, ah, that's dope.
Right.
But I didn't have that experience of like really being. So then when I was online and people were telling me, oh, you look like you're Dominican. You look like you're Trini. I'm like, what are these people talking about?
Oh, I mean, you're giving full Trinidadian.
You see? And I didn't.
No, I thought you were Trinidadian. I feel like I thought I heard you say in one of your videos that you were of Caribbean descent. And I was like, oh, she's Trini. And I like moved on.
Yes. Nah.
I decided it. I accepted it. I assigned it. And I moved on.
A lot of people do. And they're like, you're not Trini. Mm-mm.
Yeah, you look like your Trinidadian woman named Gloria. With the shoulders out. That's what you look like. Like you just came back from Carnival. And like you can make a mean pillow. Like that's what you look like. You can make a roti. Yeah.
And can't.
But you're not.
And can't. And cannot. But I think having that experience has made me, I used to be like, what is going on? It would give me like whiplash. I'm like, people are they saying I'm not this thing? And oh my gosh. And then it kind of showed me, dang, how cool is it that I think a lot of people can look like they're from different places across the diaspora? That's something that's cool. I find it really dope. And it made me realize just how much race is a construct. I'm like, why is it that I look like I could be from here and here? I look like I could be from East Africa. I've even gotten like West Fulani. You look like you could be Fulani.
Hmm.
West Africa, the Caribbean, but I'm not from those places, but I look like it. This is all made up.
Right.
It's all made up. And then it got me thinking of like, there's other similarities. Like if there's similarities and features, obviously, because we're connected, there's a thread through all of us, even with the differences.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thread through our music, through our culture, through our customs, through our languages, through our dances. Like there's so much connected between all of us. Why are we sitting here doing the work for the white man, for these crackers, arguing? Arguing.
I went on a date once with a very famous person who, during the date, Harry Potter came up.
Mm.
You're probably like, Amanda, why would Harry Potter come up?
I have a Harry Potter tattoo.
On a date, naturally. Is it Deathly Hallows?
It is. That's right. Here.
Mm. Yeah. Nice.
She's
right. I have a Jedi tattoo right here. So,
yeah.
I find a way to bring up Harry Potter whenever I can.
Love that.
Okay. House.
Ravenclaw.
Really? I would have given you Hufflepuff.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
What house do you think I am?
I would have said Ravenclaw, but that's
because... That is correct.
Oh! I am Ravenclaw. Yeah, Ravenclaw. Yeah.
I started out as a Gryffindor.
Everyone does until they really...
Well, no, I mean, I was the Sorting Hat sorted me as Gryffindor.
Oh, okay.
But then I got older. And when you're older, you start making logical decisions. Yeah, like facts. Your conversations are more based on logic versus just courage.
Exactly. You're not just moving.
Yeah.
Gryffindor is all gas, no brakes. It's like, relax.
Facts.
Oh, my God.
Very big facts right here. So we're on the date. I mentioned this. Somehow Harry Potter came up and he was like, oh, that's Devil Worship. And I was
like, so serious.
And I was like, huh. What's funny is that Nas has also said something like that. Like mm-hmm. I ran into like Nas and his brother at like Barnes & Noble one time when I was literally buying like the Deathly Hallows. And he was like, oh, that's Devil Worship. And I was like, I don't know who's telling y'all this. Because you now like the third person. But this person was like, that's Devil Worship. And I was like, what makes you think it's Devil Worship? And he was like, it's just like voodoo.
Interesting.
And I was like, yeah, see, they got to you.
They got you.
And you spoke about that.
I did.
Please speak to it here.
That is one of my favorite things to talk about.
Well, baby, Woo! You got a platform.
I still need to do my research on it, right? Because this is like a very new thing that I'm noticing. But I grew up really Christian, right? Very Christian. And especially as I started traveling and like learning through experiences and just like research and reading about like African traditional religions and then hoodoo and voodoo and then connecting the dots and kind of like expanding my own spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, people are manifesting, but speaking to existence in the church is the same thing. Okay, blessing with oil is the same thing. That's very interesting. Speaking in tongues, catching the Holy Spirit, the Holy Ghost. Is that not spiritual possession? This is all very interesting. This is the same.
People are in their car right now like, shut up!
It's, wow. Because if you see somebody who's, oh my God, they have spiritual possession. And I see my grandma praying, speaking in tongues.
Hello!
It's the same. Eyes, it's the same. Interesting.
They're just, I mean, it's like there's ushers in one place and there's like priests and priestesses.
Altars.
And altars.
Altars. We can't talk to our ancestors, but there's all these saints. Whoa, okay. And I was like, this is very interesting. There are some ties between all of this. One is seen as demonic. And I get in this conversation a lot with my parents, I think. Yeah.
You said you need to have the conversation?
No, I get into the conversation a lot with my parents.
Are your parents super Christians?
Yes.
And how do they feel about this conversation?
My dad is a little more like, Yahweh, that's it. Like, there's one way to God. I'm like, you think everybody around the world calls God the same thing? Like, I just don't. That doesn't logically make sense to me, especially like as I started learning another language.
You're speaking so much now to your uncle. Her uncle is here off camera and he's literally at the point now he's testifying. Like he's like, that's right. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not mic'd, but he basically said that he's been on dates where because he's from Shreveport, Louisiana, people will ask like, do you do voodoo?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do pins and dolls? Like, do you put blood in spaghetti? What in the true blood are we even talking about? I will say this. I feel like that, again, still is a part of like a trauma response.
Uh-huh.
like there's a protectiveness that we have that will not allow for identity to have other ways of being outside of the one that we've assigned ourselves to. And the truth is that when we talk about spirituality as it relates to Blackness and the diaspora, like so much of that has been controlled by the oppressor. So it's like, how can you divorce that from the reality of like, maybe this is where you are now and this works for you? Sure. But it doesn't change
the
fact that it was brought to us in this context by an oppressive method.
And it doesn't change the fact that our ancestors still took from their own spiritual like practices and embedded it in within the Black church. Is not the same as the white church.
No, that's why service is a million hours long in a Pentecostal and a Baptist.
You got an intermission, a pre-mission, a post-mission. It's, come on.
But I think that has to do with, and I'm just spitballing here, but I think that has to do with the fact that, you know, in tribal ceremony, it's ritual. You know, it's not just like transactional. And when we look at a lot of like religions that have been associated with whiteness, it's very transactional. I'm just doing this so that I can go to heaven. Or I'm just doing this, you know, because like someone wrote in a book that I'm supposed to do this. And so in order for me to still be accepted by this space, I have to do this, which is different than like there being tribal ritualistic practices that are not just transactional, but that like are embedded in the wellness of our tribe, like our legacy, like it's bigger than just me.
More communal.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, like they have ceremonies that last days for this reason.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, and we see that in other cultures too, like in India, like a wedding in India is like a 3-day situation. It's not transactional. Yeah. It's very real. And I wish that, I wanted you to come on here because I wanted to, at least for some people who are listening, open their consciousness to considering.
Yes. Yeah.
And what I loved about the videos was that they're very specific and clear enough to where if you watch that video and you are still in the comments saying there's nothing similar between red beans and rice and jollof rice, you are just practicing willful ignorance.
Literally.
And that's a different situation. Like, that's a different conversation. That's a side effects of willful ignorance. Ooh, write that down, Rebecca. Side effects of willful ignorance. That's an episode. Because that is different than just not knowing.
Yeah. And I have had a fair amount of, like, for the comments that are like, this is not the same. There are majority of them that are like, I never even, like, thought about that.
The stews.
The stews. And then I learned that, like, it's a West African cooking technique, actually, to, like, what did this man tell me? He was, like, a botanist. Did I say that right?
You just talking to botanists?
Was it a botanist?
Where'd you pull up a botanist?
On TikTok. He found my videos and was like, let me talk. I did a specific episode about just food. And he was like, yeah, I'm a herbologist, botanist. Like, I've traveled. And he said it's a cooking technique of like, frying the chicken a little bit and then put it in the sauce and like how we kind of make all of our stews.
Yes.
He's like, that's a West African, a Yoruba cooking technique. And he was like, I've done it. I went there. I was like, oh my gosh.
So let me tell you, like when you make a pillow in Trinidad, Grenadians make a pillow too, but Trinidadians really like make a pillow. And a pillow is a kind of like it's like a rice with meat. And some people will put like some red peppers in it. And you always put like a Scotch bonnet pepper in it. But a pillow has to be cooked in the flavor. But a pillow takes so long to cook because you first have to brown the chicken. And I just distinctly remember watching my Auntie June preparing this in this big pot. And it's such a skill. Like, my mom was always like, I've never really been able to really make a pillow because I don't have the patience to properly brown the chicken and learn the real technique of how it's done. And now here you are saying, like, it's actually a Yoruba technique. And we may use different spices by nature of like what you have access to, right? Because in Nigeria, they're going to have different spices than maybe they would have in Trinidad or... Like, even Grenada is known as the spice isle because we just have an abundance of spices. Like,
I know that.
We literally have a nutmeg on our flag because it's that it's that serious. But like, you know, whether it's mace or turmeric or nutmeg, you know, we are known for that. And before Hurricane Ivan in 2005, we were like one of the number one exporters of spices. And then there was NAFTA, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would love to go into this special segment that is just for our Patreon folks, where you and I are going to name our favorite parts of the diaspora, okay?
Oh,
so this
goodness.
Is not to start a war, but this is more so just to, like, listen, acknowledge that you can have intersectional mm-hmm. likes, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I can live in America with a Grenadian mother and still prefer a rice that may be from a whole other place in the diaspora than where I'm
okay.
from.
Okay.
That Absolutely. Kind of thing. You got shook ones, but you're that's what's going to be. All right. So
I'm
if
ready.
You are interested in hearing about some foods and dances and traditions from across the diaspora that you may not know about, then you know what you need to do. You need to go to theamandaverse.com. Join us on Patreon for this exclusive content just for my SEAL squad.
The last dose.
Well, I must say that this has been such a treat.
Yes.
And one of the things that I really love about this is that, you know, you are on the younger side of creators compared mm-hmm. to, like, my old ass at 41 going on 42. And tell that to my lower back. I'm literally sitting on a specific type of pillow for my back. But it's so imperative that creators like yourself continue to make this type of content, especially when we see the effort that is being made to undermine education.
Yeah.
When we see the effort that is being made to commit erasure of the facts, of truth, of history. When we see the effort that is being made to continuously create diaspora yeah. wars with ignorance.
Yeah.
So the work you're doing when you do this type of content is more than just, like, you know, being satirical or being funny,
yeah.
it actually is in service. So thank you for your service.
Thank you for having me on. And that's the whole, I mean, I have, like, people in my family who are like, oh, you wanted to work in government at first and you shifted. And I'm like, yeah, because I got to a point where I realized, like, working within the system is built, it's working the way it should. It is stifling. I feel like I can share these messages, share this knowledge, this education outside of it in a way that, even though I still get the death threats, I still get all of that, you know.
You're getting death threats for diaspora wars? For jollof and red beans and rice being similar?
For just my content in general, yeah. You'd be surprised.
I mean, I wouldn't, because I get death threats too, but.
Yeah, exactly. Just whatever. But I
also, why y'all just giving death threats?
That's
like,
crazy.
Why is it so casual?
Like, I'm a real person.
Facts. You should kill yourself.
Like that's kind of wild.
I'm busy.
A little bit. That takes a lot of work. But no. But yeah, like,
you are a comedian. That was dark as fuck. And that is a necessary part of comedy.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you. I'm glad that it's reaching audiences that
well, there's between reform and revolution, you know, mm-hmm. and we do need reformists, because there's, like, the people inside that are kind of, like, knocking down, like, taking screws out from the building that's been erected, so mm-hmm. that when the revolutionaries come on the outside, it's a lot easier to topple mm-hmm. the actual structure.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Where can they find you and get more of your stuff?
On Instagram, MissMissXTINAB. And then I have a link in my bio to where you go to my Twitter, my TikTok, my Instagram, my Medium, where I write, all of that stuff.
All right. Well, now you know. And if you all find yourself in a diaspora war, then you know what to do. Go watch some of her videos mm-hmm. so you can be armed mm-hmm. to dismantle the ignorance.
Please. Please do. We need it.